She allowed Miss Amory to lead her to the settee and sat at one end while Miss Amory patted cushions around her and then sat next to her. "Of course you're upset, my dear, but you must try to forget about Italy. Although, of course, the dear Italian lakes are quite delightful in the spring, I always think. Very suitable for holidays, but one wouldn't want to live there, naturally. Now, don't cry, my dear." "I think she needs a good stiff drink," suggested Barbara, sitting on the coffee table and peering critically but not unsympathetically into Lucia's face. "This is an awful house, Aunt Caroline. It's years behind the times, and we never see the ghost of a cocktail in it. Nothing but sherry or whiskey before dinner and brandy afterwards. Richard can't make a decent Manhattan, and just try asking Edward Rayner for a whiskey sour. Now, what would really pull Lucia around in no time would be a Satan's whisker." Miss Amory turned a shocked countenance upon her niece. "What?" she inquired in horrified tones. "Might a Satan's whisker be?" "Oh, it's quite simple to make, if you have the ingredients," replied Barbara. "It's merely equal parts of brandy and creme de menthe, but you mustn't forget a shake of red pepper. That's most important. It's absolutely super, and guaranteed to put some pep into you." "Barbara, you know I disapprove of these alcoholic stimulants," Miss Amory exclaimed with a shudder. "My dear father always said..." "I don't know what he said," replied Barbara, "but absolutely everyone in the family knows that dear old great-uncle Algernon had the reputation of being a three-bottle man." At first, Miss Amory looked as if she might explode, but then the slight twitch of a smile appeared on her lips, and all she said was, "Gentlemen are different." Barbara was having none of this. "They're not in the least different," she said. "Or at any rate, I can't imagine why they should be allowed to be different. They simply got away with it in those days." She produced from her handbag a small mirror, a powder puff, and lipstick. "Well, how do we look?" she asked herself. "Oh, my God!" And she began vigorously to apply lipstick. "Really, Barbara," said her aunt, "I do wish you wouldn't put quite so much of that red stuff on your lips. It's such a very bright colour." "I hope so," replied Barbara, still completing her makeup. "After all, it costs 7 and 6. 7 shillings and 6. What a disgraceful waste of money just for kiss-proof, Aunt Caroline." "I beg your pardon? The lipstick, it's called kiss-proof." Her aunt sniffed disapprovingly. "I know, of course," she said, "that one's lips are inclined to chap if one has been out in a high wind, and that a little grease is advisable. Lanolin, for instance, I always use." Barbara interrupted her. "My dear Aunt Caroline, take it from me, a girl simply can't have too much lipstick on. After all, she never knows how much of it she's going to lose in the taxi coming home." As she spoke, she replaced the mirror, powder puff and lipstick in her handbag. Miss Amory looked puzzled. "What do you mean, in the taxi coming home?" she asked. "I don't understand." Barbara rose, and moving behind the settee, leaned over to Lucia. "Never mind, Lucia understands, don't you, my love?" she asked, giving Lucia's chin a little tickle. Lucia Amory looked around blankly. "I'm so sorry," she said to Barbara. "I haven't been listening. What did you say?" Focusing her attention on Lucia again, Caroline Amory returned to the subject of that young lady's health. "You know, my dear," she said, "I really am worried about you." She looked from Lucia to Barbara. "She ought to have something, Barbara. What have we got now? Sal Volatile, of course, that would be the very thing. Unfortunately, that careless Ellen broke my bottle this morning when she was dusting in my room." Pursing her lips, Barbara considered for a moment. "I know," she exclaimed, "the hospital stores." "Hospital stores? What do you mean? What hospital stores?" Miss Amory asked. Barbara came and sat in a chair close to her aunt. "You remember," she reminded her, "all of Edna's things." Miss Amory's face brightened. "Ah, yes, of course." Turning to Lucia, she said, "I wish you had met Edna, my elder niece, Barbara's sister. She went to India with her husband, or it must have been about 3 months before you came here with Richard. Such a capable girl Edna was." "Most capable," Barbara confirmed. "She's just had twins. As there are no gooseberry bushes in India, I think she must have found them under a double mango tree." Miss Amory allowed herself a smile. "Hush, Barbara," she said. Then, turning back to Lucia, she continued, "As I was saying, dear, Edna trained as a dispenser during the war. She worked at our hospital here. We turned the town hall into a hospital, you know, during the war. And then, for some years after the war, until she was married, Edna continued to work in the dispensary at the county hospital. She was very knowledgeable about drugs and pills and that sort of thing. I dare say she still is. That knowledge must be invaluable to her in India. But what was I saying? When she left. Now, what did we do with all those bottles of hers?" "I remember perfectly well," said Barbara. "A lot of old things of Edna's from the dispensary were bundled into a box. They were supposed to be sorted out and sent to hospitals, but everyone forgot, or at least no one did anything about it. They were put away in the attic, and they only came to light again when Edna was packing to go to India. They're up there." She gestured towards the bookcase. "And they still haven't been looked through and sorted out." She rose, and taking her chair across to the bookcase, stood on it, and reaching up, lifted the black tin box down from the top. Ignoring Lucia's murmured, "Please don't bother, darling, I really don't need anything," Barbara carried the box over to the table and put it down. "Well," she said, "at least we might as well have a look at the things now that I've got them down." She opened the box. "Oh, dear, it's a motley collection," she said, taking out various bottles as she spoke. "Iodine, Friar's Balsam, something called Tinct Card Co. Castor Oil," she grimaced. "Ah, now we're coming to the hot stuff," she exclaimed, as she took out of the box some small brown tubes. "Atropine, morphine, strychnine," she read from the labels. "Now be careful, Aunt Caroline. If you arouse my furious temper, I'll poison your coffee with strychnine, and you'll die in the most awful agony." Barbara made a mock menacing gesture at her aunt, who waved her away with a snort. "Well, there's nothing here we could possibly try out on Lucia as a tonic, that's for certain," she laughed as she began to pack the bottles and piles back into the tin box. She was holding a tube of morphine aloft in her right hand as the door to the hall opened, and Treadwell ushered in Edward Rayner, Dr. Carelli, and Sir Claude Amory. Sir Claude's secretary, Edward Rayner, entered first, an unremarkable-looking young man in his late 20s. He moved across to Barbara and stood looking at the box. "Hello, Mr. Rayner. Interested in poisons?" she asked him as she continued to pack up the bottles. Dr. Carelli, too, approached the table. A very dark, swarthy individual of about 40, Carelli wore perfectly fitting evening clothes. His manner was suave, and when he spoke, it was with the slightest Italian accent. "What have we here, my dear Miss Amory?" he queried. Sir Claude paused at the door to speak to Treadwell. "You understand my instructions?" he asked, and was satisfied by the reply. "Perfectly, Sir Claude." Treadwell left the room, and Sir Claude moved across to his guest. "I hope you will excuse me, Dr. Carelli," he said, "if I go straight to my study. I have several important letters which must go off tonight. Rayner, will you come with me?" The secretary joined his employer, and they went into Sir Claude's study by the connecting door. As the door closed behind them, Barbara suddenly dropped the tube she had been holding.